do same as well. Can you see my screen? Brilliant. Right, so when Maria invited me to speak to this event, I thought it might be useful to actually do kind of a reflective exercise, because for the past 2.5 years I've been working on a European project, on the CASPER project, which is a feasibility study that was procured by the European Commission to look at whether it is feasible to actually develop a Euro-wide scheme for gender equality and intersectionality. So what I thought it would be useful is to actually present some of these project findings about certification award schemes for equalities, and compare and reflect how Athena Swan has addressed, or actually still needs to find ways to respond to, ongoing tensions, dilemmas, and challenges. You're going to find there are going to be more questions than actually answers, but you know, this is how it is. So the structure of the presentation is, I'm going to start a bit about talking about the Athena Swan charters and the equality charters and their global expansion. But I will also talk about the EU policy development and what has happened in the past couple of years. Then I will tell you more about the CASPER project. And then I will kind of use the architecture of certification award schemes model that we created in the CASPER project to discuss about particular components of certification schemes and reflect upon Athena Swan, its transformed charter, but also its global reach. So thank you, because the previous speaker actually did a great job in actually talk about the Athena Swan and how it was established and how it has expanded. But I will talk about the Athena Swan beyond just Athena Swan in the UK. So while you have Athena Swan established in 2005, we also find in 2015 the Race Equality Charter was established. But then we also see the Athena Swan traveling now. It starts in traveling to Ireland in 2015 and in Australia again in 2015, where they pilot it and they kind of become adaptation that we see kind of adaptations of the Athena Swan. In 2017, actually, Athena Swan being a pilot and adapted in the US, and in 2019 in Canada. And what is interesting about the US and the Canadian adaptation of Athena Swan is that actually we see that they are underpinned by, they're focusing on intersectional inequalities. So it's not just gender as a focus and kind of like gender plus intersectionality as you would see, as we see now in Athena Swan. And more recently, what we see is that Athena Swan is now starting to get introduced in India, but also very, very recently, a couple of months ago, actually, there was a gender equality framework that was introduced in Brazil from Advance.HE with the support of the British Council. So there's a lot happening also beyond the UK about how Athena Swan is evolving, is adapting, is changing. So I think it would be quite interesting to understand that, but also understand how Athena Swan fits and positions in relation to other certification award schemes that are happening at the moment. At the same time, when we were doing the CASPER project started in 2021, and actually in the middle of the project, the European Commission announced that you need to have a gender equality plan as an eligibility criterion to be able to apply for funding. And that was quite interesting, because it actually put a lot of pressure on the CASPER project, you know, about how does this JEP requirement fit with the possibility of a Europe-wide scheme. And what was asked by from the European Commission, it was actually to look at existing schemes and see whether existing schemes actually meet the requirements for a JEP, you know, and how they have envisaged the JEP. So the European Commission, when they talk about the JEP, the Gender Equality Plan, they have four required building blocks that a gender equality plan should have. So you see here that there is a publication, dedicated resources, data collection, monitoring, and training. And you see here how the Athena Swan, to some extent, actually address some of these building blocks. So in a way, the question is now that the Athena Swan doesn't have a funding requirement, because of the NIHR, if UK institutions are interested in applying for funding, for European funding, is Athena Swan going to be used as a way to meet the requirement for a gender equality plan? And we do see that, you know, in most of the cases, actually, they, you know, the Athena's One, the action plan through Athena's One actually meet most of these building blocks. I mean, they're not as explicitly required, but still you can see that a lot of institutions are going to be using the Athena's One to kind of provide evidence of that. Still, I think there are opportunities for UK institutions to actually go beyond the Athena's One and do, you know, become more ambitious, I think, in terms of the work they're doing in their institutions. As part of the JEP eligibility criterion, there are also five recommended areas that the European Commission suggests that their plan should focus upon and should cover. So we have work-life balance and organizational culture, gender balance and legitimate decision-making, and gender equality and recruitment and career progression. And we do know that through Athena's One, actually these three areas are covered, but then there's not so much explicit recognition of these two areas, which is integration of gender into research and teaching and the gender-based violence, including sexual harassment. What is interesting is that Ireland, in a revised version of Athena's One, actually they have made an effort to comply, if you want, and align their Athena's One charter with those areas, but also with the building blocks mentioned earlier. Now, for the UK, we do see that there is a lot of leeway because the Athena's One has flexibility. You know, institutions can define their own priorities, so they could actually explicitly focus on areas that they're not addressed by the charter or the principles. Now, the CASPER project, the aim of the CASPER project was to examine the feasibility of establishing a European award or certification scheme. And what we did in order to do this work is we started mapping and assessing existing award and certification schemes. We actually identified 113 certification award schemes, including Athena's One. And we didn't just look on schemes that focus on gender, but also on other inequalities. We also looked beyond higher education sector. We looked at business sector, we looked at multinationals, we looked at public sector organizations. And through this kind of a mapping and assessment, we wanted to distill some prerequisites for the architecture of such scheme. And we also wanted to design three scenarios and assess the visibility of these scenarios, plus a fourth action scenario for the European Commission to decide what they want to do. Now, this particular project was kind of underpinned by a very highly participatory and multi-method approach. So we had stakeholders involved in the mapping, in the interviews. We did a lot of co-creation activities. We had an online forum. We had a validation exercise with another 100 stakeholders. And we also did even institutional walkthroughs, which is about testing scenarios with institutional teams in different universities in Europe. And what I'm going to draw upon today is very much about the first section about mapping and assessing of existing schemes. And we did 74 interviews. We assessed, if you want to evaluate 31 schemes. It wasn't possible to do all the 113. And we talked to people who were not just those who were experiencing and, you know, were involved in applications, for example, for these schemes, but we also talked to people who manage those schemes. So people from Advanced HC or people from, you know, the bodies in Germany, in France, in Spain, in other countries that they were leading those schemes. We also talked to people that were not involved in any kind of scheme, because there are a lot of countries in Europe that have no experience or involvement with a scheme on equalities. And we also talked to gender experts. So I'm going to present you some of the information and how this kind of information and interviews actually led to develop this kind of architecture model of a Europe-wide scheme. But I would say an architecture of any kind of scheme, you know, that is focused on equalities, so including the Athena's One. Because there are four key components that I think would apply to any scheme, any existing scheme or any scheme that is about to be developed. And these four dimensions is why would institutions actually engage with the scheme, the what, the how, and the who. And I'm going to talk about these four components in more detail. And I'm going to talk about stakeholders. And then what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to take it back and reflect upon Athena's One and how Athena's One has fared or compared with those tensions, challenges, dilemmas, and debates that had been identified in this architecture of the scheme, because it wasn't as straightforward as we would have liked to. So why would higher education institutions engage? The stakeholders we interviewed were identified three key reasons. The first one was to increase recognition of the higher education institution, to increase attractiveness. So rather neoliberal, very instrumental reason. The second one was to responding to incentives. So for example, if there was a funding motivation, such as the one that was developed by, you know, announced by the European Commission. However, there was ambivalence and there were risks and dangers and tensions, you know, as you can see about in the quotes that I'm citing here, where stakeholders were not quite sure whether, you know, there should be incentives for funding, you know, making the right things happen for the wrong reason. And then, you know, ambivalence about, well, it could be a useful thing and it could work, you know, for some schemes, but it might not work for others. The third one, which I think is quite key, and I would say was, you know, we had a lot of stakeholders actually mention that, it was about developing a scheme that would actually, and engaging with a scheme that would actually help in providing learning and support, in actually a scheme that would systematize and collect knowledge and would actually provide support to institutions on their journey. And we did find from assessment of existing schemes that site visits and tailored feedback throughout the process actually was particularly useful. Now, reflecting on Athena Swan, we do know that, you know, since COVID, we have no eligibility funding criteria for Athena Swan in terms of the NIHR. This was withdrawn. The challenge, I suppose, that I would like to raise is that, you know, what would be the effects of these terms in terms of the uptake of the Athena Swan? But more importantly, what would be the change in terms of, you know, would this sector actually change in terms of gender equality and intersectionality? Is Athena Swan, I suppose, so embedded in the higher education sector that this doesn't make a difference? Or, I mean, if Brexit, you know, UK institutions carry on applying for funding, would the EU eligibility criteria actually be a new funding motivation for institutions that are engaged with Athena Swan to use it as evidence that they have a JEC? The other one, which I think is quite interesting, is that we found actually through the CASPER project, but also before, I've done a lot of work with Athena Swan through other projects, and there was always this kind of perception of applicants in Athena Swan that it felt like a one-way street. It felt very judgmental. While we do see that this kind of feedback has been informing the new charter. So the Transform Charter, actually, we see a shift towards more partnership-focused relationships between the applicants and Advanced HE, not so much judgmental. And we do see a much more developmental feedback process. So we see a lot of minor and major feedback rather than just, you know, kind of like fail and pass. So we do see that there's an effort from, I think, Advanced HE and through Athena Swan to actually have a much more a two-way relationship where, you know, the institutions feel supported and they feel guided in the process, which I think wasn't the case in the past. The what? So what should be the focus of a scheme? You know, and we talked about the Europe-wide scheme. Should it be gender? Should it be intersectionality? I think that was the most debated topic that we had to go through with the stakeholders. Stakeholders themselves would debate in the interviews about, oh, yes, no, gender would be great. You know, you should be at the forefront. But then actually, no, intersectionality would be, no, we should have intersectionality. So you could see that there was a lot of ambivalence in how, you know, and whether, you know, gender and sectionality should be from the very beginning in the scheme. And you do see that, especially from UK stakeholders, I had a lot of experience with Athena Swan, that, you know, they were concerned about this, I suppose what Calvin was talking before, about this competing hierarchy, where, you know, so much more resources were provided on gender, but then less on race. And we had some stakeholders that had a lot of experience with, the schemes, and they were mentioning that one, you know, if they had a second chance, they would actually, you know, suggest that the scheme should be based on dissectionality. But then they would come go back and say, but when you start with a new scheme, intersectionality could be very complex. And how do we address this complexity? So still was not, you know, was not quite clear what would be the right answer. So there were a lot of debates and tensions around this issue. Also, in terms of the European wide landscape, if you want, there were a lot of challenges collecting intersectional data and also beyond the binary. There were particular national contexts where particular intersectional data were not allowed to be collected. So how do you actually develop a Europe-wide scheme if countries and organizations do not collect specific data? There was also stakeholders, in particular a UK stakeholder, raised the concerns of expertise and of being uncomfortable, and how that was kind of challenging, if you want, meaningful commitment of UK institutions, especially around race, ethnicity, and sexual orientation. So you see, for example, that in the quote below, that sometimes institutions were not feeling as comfortable, and that was kind of seen as a way not to engage with something like the Race Equality Charter, and how they had to have the optics right, while compared to gender, you know, it would be much more straightforward. Reflecting on Athena Swan, I think, again, there is an ongoing challenge. I think Athena Swan in the past, you know, has been criticized about the lack of intersectionality. In the Transform Charter, they've tried to make it more explicit in the principles, but I think there's needs still to be done in operationalizing this beyond, you know, there's a lot about statistical representation, but actually, I don't think it actually meets the purpose of changing systems and looking at this much more holistically. And I suppose what was even said with, you know, Galvan before, you know, it's like, how do you actually ensure that there is no competition and actually you have intersectional approaches throughout? What is interesting is that we do see that in the international adaptations of the Athena Swan in Canada and the US, but also Brazil, we do see that intersectional inequalities are, you know, the schemes are starting with intersectional inequalities as the focus, as the center. So it's going to be very interesting to see in the future how these are going to evolve and what issues are going to bring. And one question would be, you know, would an integrated charter, for example, from Advanced AT would be the way forward? The how was very much about how would a scheme operationalize, you know, what kind of like elements would have, would it certify processes or outcomes? And we did find that, especially again in a Europe wide landscape where there's, it's very diverse in terms of, you know, efforts towards inequalities, then there is a kind of like a concern that if you start with certifying only outcomes, the organization starting now would be penalized because outcomes will take a lot of time, you know, they won't happen overnight. And many stakeholders were in favor of both, and this is where the progressive character of a scheme would be quite, you know, useful, like what Athena Swan have with different levels of certification. Now, there was a lot of discussion about self-assessment or peer review, and many stakeholders, you know, favored the self-assessment as a key issue, you know, to take ownership, to engage people, to involve people in the institution, but it can be a key administrative burden. Across, you know, the different schemes, we had many stakeholders who were mentioned about how that would create workload for people in the organization. The peer review and external review was also considered very useful for feedback and supporting these schemes, but there were concerns about the consistency of reviews, especially when they had multiple reviewers taking place with, from different backgrounds. We also talked about whether, you know, they should be used qualitative or quantitative indicators as kind of important indicators for the schemes. And we did see that especially corporate schemes were actually very focused on quantitative indicators and KPIs. We did have an example of a scheme that was just based on qualitative indicators in Sweden, but then we found out it actually was abandoned because it was very difficult to actually operationalize. What we also saw that when we mapped all the schemes, that we did see a shift towards both. So actually, both qualitative and quantitative indicators were considered as quite important to underpin, you know, these schemes and how they're implemented.
Terina, you have 5 minutes.
Great. So reflection of the Athena Swan, I think the Athena Swan in that way is quite useful because the progressive character, you know, allowed to evaluate if you want and take into account the process and the outcomes. But there is, of course, the ongoing dilemma of like, would they, you know, these, the bronze, silver, gold, would they reach a plateau, or would we have shifting goalposts where, you know, what 5 years ago, what actions of an institution would be qualifying for a bronze award would not really qualify for a bronze award in 5 years' time because of the sector moving forward. Also, in terms of the self-assessment, there's still criticism of administrative burden. I mean, the new Transform Charter, they have provided more flexibility in terms of priorities, less data are required. But then I think the challenge that I see is that could higher education institutions hide more and can be selective in what they prioritize? And how do you actually hold higher education institutions accountable in terms of the cognition of the workload for Athena Swan? I think that's still, while it is mentioned in the charter, it's not required to actually report how you recognize the workload of the people involved. I think in terms of peer review, we also saw in the Transform Charter that there is a professionalization, if you want, of the peer review process, so much more careful planning and discussion and design of the review process. But then there is also the ongoing dilemma about how technocratic this kind of reviews can be and to what extent the documents can reflect the real situation on the ground. Last component is about the who should be targeted. So when we talk about the Europe-wide scheme, we talked about, should we target only higher education institutions or all? I mean, we do know that context and sector matters, but there's also potential about the knowledge and practice exchange across sectors. The other question we had was about who should certify. And stakeholders mentioned that, you know, reported that there needs to be a body that can show agility, that can be credible and not bureaucratic. And the last one was about who should pay. There was a lot of concern about widening inequalities, you know, especially in countries where there are not many resources in higher education institutions to do, you know, the main academic activities, let alone to do inequalities work. So there was a lot of discussion about transition approaches and about reflecting national resources with having a kind of mixed approach of payment. Now, in terms of Athena Swan, I think, you know, who should certify, we see that, especially in the global adaptation of the Athena Swan, we see different approaches. So we do see bodies with authority and credibility in academia supporting the work. So in Australia, the Australian Academy of Science and the Australian Academy of Technology and Engineering is supporting that work. While in the US, we have a kind of nonprofit organization, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, coordinating that work. And in Canada, we see research councils actually taking you know, the work and coordinating, supporting the Athena Swan. I think one of the questions that is rising, and especially with what's happening in the media at the moment, is how is Advanced AG being perceived as a certification body and whether this is changing in light of what is, you know, the attacks they're having, the critiques they're having. The last one I wanted to say is about who should pay. I mean, we know about the membership model in the UK, but I think it's quite interesting that in Ireland, for example, we did see that the Higher Education Authority funded Athena Swan for all the higher education institutions. And while this is important for institutions that are starting now, schemes such as Athena Swan, is it sustainable and how far it can go? So just some key thoughts, I think, on Transform Charter, especially of the Athena Swan. I think it's quite interesting that it has responded to consultation. There were a lot of critics on Athena Swan, and it just showed that Athena Swan can be flexible, it can be dynamic, it can meet needs of the sector, and it can tailor to different contexts as we see in the global reach. But I think one of the questions I'm always grappling with is that how can we further nurture collective action to change actually the sector, change the system, not just to change the institutions, but how can we use that opportunity to actually go beyond our organizations and work together to change systemic issues? Also, the second one was about focus on autonomy and flexibility of higher education institutions. So we do see that there are particular priorities that are being favored now in the Transform Charter, less data so that we have less burden. But then there is a risk that institutions could hide data and could, you know, could select priorities and might not be that meaningful. And the last one is, of course, intersectionality. You know, what would be, you know, what would be the way forward? How would we go beyond binaries, beyond statistical representation to transform systems of oppression without a hierarchy of inequalities? And the last one, I think our work from CASPER at least, it showed that, you know, developing and implementing certification schemes for addressing inequalities, they're full of tensions, full of contradictions, dilemmas, and it's very important to understand them and debate them. And the certification schemes, I think, as Athena's work, they can be powerful tools if we actually exploit them and not tap on them and utilize them as opportunities to scrutinize, to challenge, to change systems, change processes and practices, and also help us mobilize collectively. But there is the danger, you know, if we don't actually, you know, use with them in such a way that their neoliberal logic actually is going to do what, you know, what Audre Lorde has said, you know, that the master's tools will never really dismantle the master's house. So what is our role and how we should act in the future? I think that's something I would like to debate and discuss with you and see, you know, and discuss what would be the best way forward, because I'm ambivalent, I think, as well about, you know, the future and, you know, our role in terms of Athena's form. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Charula. That was great. Again, we will take a few questions for Charula right now for about 5 minutes, because otherwise we're going to run out of time. So if you have questions that you want to put at this point, do that and try and keep them short before we move on to Ruth's presentation.
We have a question. I'll read it out. Does the CASPER project look at issues of disability?
Yes, so we actually looked as well in the schemes about disability and we looked at that. But I have to say, the kind of main focus on the European Commission was on gender equality, and we tried to go through beyond gender equality and, you know, and discuss about intersectionality and look at other kind of competing, you know, well, the inequalities, as Calvin said before. We didn't particularly focus on disability, but we did take into account the schemes that were, you know, that, for example, the disability charter that we have in the UK, that was one of the things that we mapped and we looked into. I think one of the things that we're trying to convince, if you want, the European Commission, that this definitely needs to be intersectional approach where all these characteristics are taken into account. Now, as I said before, there are particular national contexts, especially at European level, where we have a lot of barriers in terms of data, in terms of understanding what's happening actually in the academic systems. So that is a big, if you want, a big block towards our work and, you know, advancing and going forward. But yes, we did look at that as well.
Thanks very much. We're going to move on to Ruth's presentation, because then that will allow us to have a discussion at the end of the end of that. So Ruth, I'm going to pass it on to you.
I'm just inevitably doing the share screen dance at the moment. Thank you for bearing with me. Right, here we go.